Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back discussing the Torah portions. This week, we're looking at the portion of Bechukotai, which goes from Leviticus 26:3 through 27:34. This is the last portion in the book of Leviticus, and on some years, it's read along with the previous portion, Behar. So be sure to check the pinned comment below to see if you should read both portions or just this one this week. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you pause the video and do that, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
In Bechukotai, God tells the people of Israel of the blessings they will receive if they follow his laws, and the punishments they will receive if they break his covenant, after which he instructs them about the rules for vowing, dedicating, and redeeming holy gifts to Adonai.
So this portion begins with God speaking to Israel and telling him what he promises he'll do for them if they walk according to his statutes and obey his commands. He basically says that if Israel obeys him, then God will make sure that the rains come in their seasons and that the ground is fruitful. There won't be famine. There will be peace throughout all the land. No enemies will attack Israel. Israel will defeat their enemies. God will make his dwelling place or his tabernacle among the people of Israel. He will be their God and they will be his people. So this is a pattern that we'll actually see again later in the Torah. But God is basically saying obedience to him comes with rewards. When the people of Israel are following God like they should, it will all be really great. God is promising that. He's not just saying it could be like that. He's promising it will be. But on the flip side, if the people of Israel don't obey God, then as we'll see shortly here, the consequences are really, really bad.
God is basically promising to do everything for the people of Israel if they follow his commands. He's promising them prosperity and protection and peace and victory. All if they just do what he says. They won't have to worry about providing for themselves because God is going to provide for them. And so this shows that when the people of Israel are following God, they can rely on him. God is going to be forever faithful to the people of Israel. And he says that he will make them fruitful and multiply them and confirm his covenant with them. So because God took the people of Israel to be his covenant people, he brought them out of Egypt so that they would not be Egypt's slaves, but so that they would be his slaves. So God is saying he will take care of them as long as they rely on him.
Now, after God lays out all the blessings for the people of Israel if they follow him, God then goes into detail about some of the punishments for Israel if they disobey him. He starts out by saying, if you don't obey me and you don't keep my commands, and if instead of keeping them, you reject my statutes, and if your soul abhors my ordinances so as to not carry out all my commands, and so break my covenant, I in turn will do this to you. I will set my face against you. So this is more than just simply slipping up, making mistakes, and accidentally sinning, and then apologizing and saying, God, I'll try and get it right next time. God here is talking about if the people of Israel openly reject his covenant, they break his covenant, and they throw away the Torah, they throw away all of God's commands, and in essence, they're throwing away God himself. And God says that if the people of Israel do this, then God is going to punish them severely, in stages. He'll keep ramping up the punishment. God talks a lot more here about the punishments than he does about the blessings. And so here God says that he'll give them fevers and that their crops won't grow and that their enemies will strike them down and that the sky won't give rain. There will be plagues and wild beasts that kill them and their children. There will be severe famine to the point that they're actually eating their own children. And then eventually an enemy will come in, conquer Israel, slaughter tons of them, and exile the rest. So God is very vivid here with what he says he will do if they disobey him, if they reject his commands. He's laying it all out for them right here at the get-go.
And again, like you said, this is not some minuscule misstep. This is not some unintentional mistake. God's already made provision for that. We saw that in God's covenant with the priesthood. When God promised to make his dwelling place with them, and he chose the priesthood and the sacrificial system as a way of atonement for the people of Israel. But this is for something intentional where the people of Israel break the covenant. The priesthood was established to preserve the people of Israel within the framework of the covenant. But once the people of Israel break the covenant, it doesn't work anymore. And so God says he will make their sanctuaries desolate and he will not smell their pleasing aromas. The sacrificial system, the priesthood, the tabernacle, God's promise that he would dwell with them, all breaks down when they set themselves against God and against his covenant. We already saw that with the golden calf. Moses barely managed to keep the covenant together then.
Right.
And so God is now saying, spelling it out very clearly, if you turn away from this covenant, you will not get the blessings of this covenant. It will break down, and with it comes God's punishment. In fact, God says he will bring the sword on them to execute the vengeance of the covenant. Mm. God takes the covenant very seriously. And so when the people are following him, he will seek to confirm it. But when the people of Israel break that covenant, he will take it into his hands to avenge that covenant.
God even says when they reject this covenant that the people of Israel are acting in unfaithfulness, which they committed against me, against God. And also, and they're acting with hostility against me. And so for that reason, God himself was acting with hostility against them to bring them into the land of their enemies. So God is taking their hostility to the covenant as hostility toward himself. And so he will respond with hostility toward hostility. When the people of Israel are hostile to God, God will be hostile back.
But even in God's reaction to Israel's hostility with hostility, we see that God's still giving this unique treatment to the people of Israel, and that it's still about the covenant. God either confirms the covenant or takes vengeance on the covenant. And part of that covenant is the promise that God will be with them and will be their God and will dwell among them. And so we see that if they follow him, he will walk among them and be their God. But if they turn in hostility, if they walk contrary to him, then it says he also will walk contrary to them. So God is with the people of Israel. The question is he walking with them or is he walking against them, seeking to avenge their hostility to him?
Now, another aspect of this, besides just going against God, is that it basically says that the people of Israel will end up going against the land by not giving it its Shabbats. We had read in the last portion that God had set up Shabbat years for the land of Israel so that every 7 years the land could rest, could have a Shabbat Shabbaton, a really restful Shabbat where the people of Israel aren't working the fields anymore. And so God is basically prophesying here that he knows that in the future the people of Israel are going to not give the land its Shabbat. They're going to ignore the Shabbat years, and so God is going to kick the people of Israel out of the land so that during their time of exile, the land can get its Shabbats that's been missing while the people of Israel were ignoring God's commands. In fact, we read later in 2 Chronicles that at the beginning of the exile to Babylon, it says, those who had escaped from the sword, Nebuchadnezzar carried away to Babylon, to fulfill the word of Adonai by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths, its Shabbatot. All the days of its desolation, it kept Shabbat until 70 years were complete. So in direct fulfillment of Jeremiah's prophecy that they would be in exile for 70 years, and also in direct fulfillment of the prophecy in Leviticus that the land would get to keep its Shabbats, here it's saying that when the kingdom of Judah was exiled, the land got to keep 70 years of Shabbat. So this speaks to the importance of the Shabbat. Again, like we had read previously, the Shabbat year is called a Shabbat Shabbaton, a really restful Shabbat. And this is also applied to the seventh day Shabbat and to Yom Kippur. And it's basically showing this is how important it is for the people of Israel to keep the Shabbat, to keep the Shabbat years even. God requires that of his people and of his land, and the land is going to get its rest one way or the other. And so this shows God isn't just faithful to his people, Israel. He's also faithful to his land of Israel. That is his land that he has chosen for his people. And even if the people of Israel are abusing that land, God will still be faithful to the land. And as we see, he'll also be faithful to bring his people back to his land.
Even though God inflicts all these terrible things on the people of Israel, and they suffer so much destruction and death and exile, and they're scattered all through the nations, God says, if through this discipline, they turn from their sin, they confess their sin, and they turn to God, he will remember his covenant with them. And more specifically, God says he will remember his covenant with their fathers. He will remember his covenant with Jacob and with Isaac and with Abraham, and he will remember the land. So if his people confess their sins and turn from them, he will bring them back to the land because of his covenant with them. And even when they're scattered, even when they're in rebellion against him, even when they've sinned and they have not repented or confessed, God says, yet for all that, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not spurn them, neither will I abhor them so as to destroy them utterly and break my covenant with them. For I am Adonai their God, but I will for their sake remember the covenant with their forefathers, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations, that I might be their God. I am Adonai. Now, we already said that God would bring all this punishment on Israel if they broke his covenant. But God is saying, even if they break the covenant, he will not break the covenant. Even if he has to punish them, he will remember them. Even if he has to destroy them, he won't destroy them completely. Because he is their God, even when they are not acting as his people. Ultimately, his covenant was that he brought them out of Egypt to be their God. And he will be their God, no matter what else happens. And God caps this all off with saying, I am Adonai. We've talked about it before, that this is the first commandment. This is the foundation of the entire Torah, is that Adonai is the God of Israel who brought them out of Egypt. And that's what God brings it back to here. God has used it time and time again to tell the people of Israel, you have to keep my commands. You have to keep my covenant because I am Adonai. But now God is saying, even if they forsake everything, even if they forsake him, if they don't hold on to a single command, if they don't hold on to him, yet God says, I am Adonai. That still stands. And that is the bedrock of the entire covenant. And so as long as that stands, as long as he is Adonai, which is forever, so he will remember the covenant. He will not break the covenant. He will remain faithful to the people of Israel. And when they return to him, he will return them to their land.
So it's really interesting that in the beginning of this chapter, when God is laying out the blessings that will come from obedience, God says that if they obey him, then I will walk among you and be your God, and you shall be my people. It's almost like an if-then. If you obey me, then you'll be my people, and I'll be your God. But then God says, if you disobey me, I will punish the snot out of you. But then I will still be your God. I am your God, and I will remember my covenant. So it shows this dichotomy of when Israel is obeying God, they are being his people. And when they're disobeying God, they aren't being his people, and yet they still are his people. This is along the lines of what Paul said in Romans when he said, one is not a Jew who is only so outwardly and who only has circumcision in his flesh, but one is a Jew who is also so inwardly and whose circumcision is also in his heart. And also what he says in Romans 9, not all who are of Israel are Israel. Basically, when Jews aren't keeping the covenant, they aren't being God's covenant people. And that's why the book of Hosea says, you are not my people and I am not your God. But at the same time, no matter what Israel does, God is still our God. We are still his people. And so he will always remember his covenant to us, and he will always be faithful to us. Paul says, what if some Jews are unfaithful? Will that make useless God's faithfulness? Let it not be. There is that dichotomy where unbelieving Jews, rebellious Jews, are not God's people. And yet, the entire people of Israel is God's people no matter what we do. So the question is, are we going to walk in that chosenness? Are we going to act like his people? Are we going to be his people? Or are we going to face the punishment that comes with being God's people in rebellion to him? And even in God's punishment of us, that is with the end of us confessing our sins, of us turning back to him so that he can be our God again. Even when God is punishing us, destroying us, oppressing us, exiling us, dispersing us, he's doing it because we are his people and he wants to be our God. And so if we will not follow him, God will make us follow him no matter what it costs. And ultimately, that's why he gave Yeshua to give us the new covenant, because he specifically said he gave us the new covenant, which isn't like the covenant that God made with us at Sinai, the covenant which we broke. All of these punishments come with breaking God's covenant. And so God says, I can do better. I'm going to do a new covenant where I write the Torah on the hearts of the people of Israel, and they'll all know me, and they will be my people, and I will be their God. That is always what it comes back to, is the people of Israel will be God's people because we are his people. And when that happens, he will be our God. All the nations will see it, and they will all know that he is God.
And I think that once again, this concept of Israel being God's people and needing to be God's people circles back around to holiness. God called the people of Israel to be a nation of Kohanim, a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. This covenant is about God dwelling with his people, which, as we've already seen, requires the people of Israel to be holy. And that's what the priesthood is for, is to help the people of Israel to be holy and to be holy for the people of Israel, so God can dwell with them. So God can fulfill this holy covenant and the people of Israel can fulfill this holy covenant. It's all about the holiness through which the people of Israel fulfill that covenant and be those priests and bring all the nations near to Yeshua. And that holiness is achieved, as we see here, when they walk in the statutes and observe the commandments. If they do that, if they keep his covenant, then they're walking in holiness. But apart from holiness, they cannot keep the covenant. And ultimately, that holiness is only given through their high priest, Yeshua, who takes away all their sins once and for all. Like you said, this covenant, they broke. They were not able to keep it. But in Yeshua, in the new covenant, the people of Israel are fully set apart, fully made holy, because they have the Torah on their hearts. They have Yeshua on their hearts. And so they all know him from the least to the greatest. And then they can all keep that covenant and all be the holy people they were called and made to be.
So after God lays out all of these benefits and punishments for obedience or disobedience, he then moves on to chapter 27, the last chapter in Leviticus, which actually talks about valuations of things for vows and consecrated things to Adonai. In the context of making a, quote, difficult vow, God first starts out by talking about the valuation of people. He says that if you vow people, these are the valuations that you use when figuring out how much to pay. Basically, in this passage, God says that you can vow people, or you can vow clean animals that can be offered, or you can vow unclean animals that can't be offered. And in the case of people or unclean animals, they are valued either by a fixed valuation or by the priest, and then the person making the vow has to pay that back, rather than giving it as a vow offering or something like that. One instance where this could have applied was in the case of Jephthah in the book of Judges, when he vowed to offer to God whatever came out of his house. And the first thing that came out of his house was his virgin daughter, a person. What Jephthah did was he actually offered his virgin daughter. But what he could have done, according to this passage, is pay the valuation so that way he didn't have to offer her. We actually made a 4-minute animated video discussing how this passage in Torah relates to the story of Jephthah and also the lesson that we can get from that story. So you can go check out that video if you'd like.
God then moves on to talk about other things that you can dedicate to God, starting with animals. And he says, if you vow an animal, it's holy to Adonai. And because of that, you cannot exchange it or substitute it. It belongs to God. It's his. You don't have the right to substitute that. If you try to substitute it, it says that the substitute and the original both become holy. If it's an animal that's able to be offered, it has to be offered. But if it's an animal that can't be offered, you pay the price of the animal as your offering. Additionally, if you want to redeem the animal, you have to add a fifth to the value of the animal, and then you can get it back. And then we also see some very similar rules for if someone wants to dedicate a house to God or a field to God. Once again, it becomes holy, it belongs to God. He has to pay the price of that thing that he's donating. And then if he wants it back, he has to add a fifth to its value, and then he can get it back. Now, when a person gives a piece of land to God as a gift, it becomes a holy gift. And if he doesn't redeem it before the Jubilee, it becomes a holy possession forever, which means the priests get to keep it. Instead of it reverting to the original owner after the Jubilee, it goes to the priests and it can't be bought or sold or redeemed. So I wanted to note, both with the animals and with the field, that when it's given and it becomes holy, it can't be taken back. And that's because it's God's now. There's this correlation between something being holy and it belonging to God. We've already seen, as we've talked about holiness, that the things of the Mishkan and the priests and the people of Israel all belong to God. So that's an integral part of holiness, is that belonging to God, which gives Him authority over what to do with it. You can't just take it back whenever you want, because it's become holy, which means that it's in God's authority. And along those lines, we see that with certain other things, like the firstborn of animals or the tithe of your land, they belong to God from the get-go, whether you dedicate them to God or not. And because of that, they are holy. You cannot dedicate them to God because they are already His. Once again, God makes a provision for these things. If you want to add a fifth to the value of the item, you can get it back in some cases. But in other cases, like the tithe of your animals, every tenth animal belongs to God. God says you cannot redeem it. You cannot exchange it. You can't be selective about it because the tenth always belongs to God. This is very similar to what we saw with the priestly portions, where God was giving certain portions to the priests, but God was also keeping things back for Himself. And that was His way of showing, the whole thing belongs to me. So God is showing with the holy things, some things you can redeem, some things you can't, but the point is that they all belong to God, and God has the authority to hold them back or to release them as He pleases. So I think the big takeaway from this portion, and also the whole book of Leviticus, is that holiness comes with blessing to those who belong to God and follow His word. In this portion, we saw that the people of Israel will receive God's blessing if they keep His commands, if they walk in His covenant, and that's the covenant of holiness. And we saw that the foundation for this is that He is Adonai. He brought them out of Egypt to be His people. And so they belong to Him. And because they belong to Him, they've been set apart. They've been made holy. And so if they act in that holiness by following God's instructions, then they will receive the blessing. And we see this as the theme of the entire book of Leviticus, how God took the priests for Himself from among the people of Israel. By taking them to belong to Him in a special way, He made them holy. And with that, He gave them more rules to follow. And when they walked in that holiness and followed those rules, they brought blessing to the people of Israel, and that God was able to come into the Mishkan and dwell with them in their midst. And we saw that in order for God to remain in the midst of the people of Israel, they themselves need to be holy as He is holy, because He is the God who brought them out of Egypt to be His slaves. And because of that, they have to uphold that holiness among the people. They need to uphold righteousness and punish sin in their midst for that reason. And the people of Israel are uniquely called, even through the kosher laws, to maintain that holiness, and that God called them to belong to Him in a unique way. As followers of Yeshua, we have all been bought by the blood of Messiah to be slaves of God. We belong to Him. And with that belonging to God comes that holiness of being His temple and Him living in us. But with that holiness and that belonging to Him comes a responsibility to walk in His word. If we faithfully follow after Him and obey all His commands for us, then we will be walking in the holiness which He has given to us. And with that holiness, through our holy high priest Yeshua, we will receive the blessing of everlasting life and eternal dwelling in the presence of God.
That wraps up the portion of Bechukotai and the book of Leviticus. Next week, we'll be looking at the portion of Bamidbar, the first portion of Numbers. So be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to keep updated on new videos. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.